a second about what's happening in Flint. You know, I am very proud of what I've done as president. But the only job that's more important to me is the job of father. And I know that if I was a parent up there, I would be beside myself that my kids' health could be at risk. And that's why over the weekend I declared a federal emergency in Flint to send more resources on top of the assistance that we've already put on the ground. We've designated a federal coordinator to make sure the people of Flint get what they need from their country. It is a reminder of why you can't shortchange basic services that we provide to our people and that we together provide as a government to make sure that public health and safety is preserved.
For the most part, this is still not the national issue that it deserves to be. It's in the consciousness of a few more people, but for the most part, it's not really being talked about. And then, of course, if you make your way over to right-wing circles, they will tell you this is all the Democrats' fault. Why? Because there was a Democratic mayor in Flint, and there was a Democratic city council, but as usual, they like to leave out the most important fact. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 148. My name is Mel, and thank you. Thank you for being here. I talked about this a little while ago. I ended a show with this. I was talking about the emergency manager. I probably ranted for about 10 minutes. I want to thank you so much for being with me. And when I did that part at the end of the show where I talked about the problem in Flint, it seemed to me that it was going to enter the news cycle, the larger consciousness of the United States, and then something was going to be done about it. And so here we are, just about 2 years out from where this thing began, and maybe a few months out from where the governor finally had to admit that, yep, yeah, they screwed up. So what the president was talking about right there was shortchanging basic services. The governor of Flint, Governor Snyder, Rick Snyder, said that he did this in order to save the city some money. He switched from the water that was coming from Detroit to the water coming out of the Flint River, without first treating that water, which then corroded the inside of the pipes, which has now poisoned the entire city.
We are here today because a state-appointed emergency manager made the decision that the city of Flint would stop purchasing treated water that had well served them for 50 years and instead purchase untreated water and not treat that water. That is the decision that was made. And by law, the state of Michigan had to approve that switch, and they did not require corrosion control. All to save money. Now, that state decision resulted in lead leaching out of lead service pipes and plumbing, exposing kids to excess amounts of lead.
But Melvin, what about the Democrats? Why are you letting the Democrats off the hook? I'm not letting the Democrats off the hook. The Democrats didn't have anything to do with this. So when the governor decides that you are in an economic crisis, he appoints what is known as an emergency manager or an economic emergency manager. And that emergency manager strips all local officials of their power. Yes, they are allowed to say stuff. Yes, they are allowed to do stuff. But for the most part, it doesn't. They have no power. Only the emergency manager, who answers only to the governor. And so while the city was under emergency management, and the idea here, and what we're learning from the emails that were released by the Snyder administration, what we're learning here is the reason they switched their water source was because they wanted to privatize the water source. It had nothing to do with cheaper this or that. And they said, hey, we switched the water source. We saved $2 million. Now, depending on what numbers you look at, we are looking at somewhere between probably on the low end, the low end, I've seen $500 million to replace all of the water heaters, all of the water system in Flint. But I heard a plumber from Flint talking about this a little while ago, and he says, well, you have to replace all of the water lines between the homes. You have to replace all the water heaters in the homes. You're talking about 100,000 Flint residents. You're probably talking about at least 25,000 homes, maybe 20,000 homes somewhere in that neighborhood. And he says at a cost of roughly, you know, these are all estimates, $10,000 per home, we're looking at a lot more money than just, say, $500 million. Did I say, I probably said $500,000 before, $500 million. He said, you're probably looking at, on the low end, about $1.5 billion. So this has cost $1.5 billion. But while all this is going on, nothing has happened in Flint. The governor, and he's hearing from plumbers. He has not called in the plumbers. Yes, I understand that you folks do not have clean water. I understand that the water that you're paying the highest water rates in the world. And you cannot drink the water. You cannot cook with the water. All you can do is flush the toilet. But when whatever you create hits the toilet, you better hope that it doesn't snap back up and wet your bum, because you're going to get lead in your bum. Forgive me. I understand I'm being crass, but it's nasty, and I have no idea what that's like to not be able to use the water that comes out of your tap. And for the governor, after he did this, to just sit there and go, we're looking into it. We don't know what we're going to do.
So in Flint, where the water has been proven over and over scientifically that it's poison, it's toxic, it's not getting better, we pay the highest rates in the nation for the lowest quality water. We're at Mission of Hope, where their water was shut off, I think, for a $1,200 water bill. My water bills are currently $1,049 as of today. We don't want to pay it. We keep fighting to pay it. They will shut you off after 90 days, cap your sewer, and then they can condemn your home. And if you don't have proper hygiene for your kids, then CPS gets called in.
Well, let's say you have a home that's worth $80,000, but your tax lien is $1,000. You lose your $80,000 home to a $1,000 tax lien,
and
plus your $1,000
water bill,
which you don't have the $3,000 to pay the tax lien or the water bill. So now they have your house and your property.
Yep.
$2,000. And your kids.
Yeah, if you have no home, they literally you can take your kids.
No home. And many of us are still buying our own bottled water because getting down to the fire stations is almost difficult, if not impossible. And there are some places that there aren't fire stations or grocery stores, like the North. Unfortunately, we still have to bathe in it, so you're still getting exposed. I have a doctor's appointment at 3:30 because I'm not getting any better. When my family were dealing with seizures, anemia, bone loss, bone breakage, diverticulosis, liver failure, and that's just me. As well as breathing issues, because you're breathing in the steam from the chemicals. So what you try to do is you try to limit your kids' exposure. You plan your meals.
You're adapting to.
Yes. You plan your meals around how much bottled water you have. If you don't have enough bottled water, you don't get to make soup, or you can't rinse your meat and your vegetables because you're not going to use that tap water. The filters they give out don't fit my sink because I have a pull-out sprayer. Also, we just found out that in a lot of homes, it's not enough anyways. The filters aren't filtering out the high levels of lead. So we just found out people who thought they were safe are not. The little plastic filters, surprise. Mm-hmm. Our trust is gone.
And all of this, not because of anything that those folks did, but because of something that Governor Snyder did, that Republican Governor Snyder did. At 15 parts per billion lead in the water, 15 parts per billion, that is where the government has said that's where we have to do something. That's where we have to react. That's where that has to be answered. At 5,000 parts per billion, the water is considered toxic waste. And most of the homes in Flint are testing at about 5,000 parts per billion. Somewhere around there, maybe 2,000 or 3,000, 4,000, 6,000. The highest reported so far for a woman that tested her own home was 10,000 parts per billion. That's twice the level of toxic waste. And Governor Snyder has said that he will decide how or when to fix this during the budget negotiations, which, by the way, could go on until May. And up until then, the city's kids are still being poisoned. There's one thing that Governor Snyder did come out with that might be a little bit of a solution for the kids. But the larger thing is they need the pipes replaced. This is happening in an American city. I remember when Katrina hit New Orleans. And I flipped on my television and I was looking in newspapers and I was looking through Time magazine. And I saw homes flooded. I saw people floating, dead people floating in the street. And it was incredible to me that this was an American city, that this was happening. And not just any American city. This was happening to New Orleans. And the way New Orleans works is if you live up high, well, then you're doing just fine. You've got plenty of money and the water's not going to reach up there. But if you live somewhere, say, the lower Ninth Ward, which is largely African American, well, that's the water's going to get you. The water's going to get you if ever those levees break. And after it happened, George W. Bush decided to do absolutely nothing. Local government was screaming out for the help, and George W. Bush decided to do absolutely nothing until about after a week after it hit. And then what came from all the pundits was, there you go, that's government for you, government failed you. No, he intentionally sat on his hands. America just reelected him to be president, and not more than a year after that, he stands by and watches an entire American city just get swallowed up and won't send in any help for them. And then is given a complete pass by the right-wing media. And all they point out, this is government. Government has failed you. No. The Bush administration failed. And it's by design. They don't want you to believe the government can do anything. But government is like anything. If it's got good people, it will work. If it's got Republicans, it will not. So that's what they're playing this time around. They go, oh, look, who likes government? Nobody likes government. You know why? Look what government did to the people of Flint. No. Government did not do that to the people of Flint, Michigan. Governor Rick Snyder did that. And that's by design, because he's a Republican. And he needs two things. First of all, he wants to sell off America to the highest bidder. He was trying to privatize the water and ended up poisoning a city of 100,000, mostly African-American people, most people who do not have the means, and a lot of people who do not have health care and now have all of these problems, liver failure, skin lesions. And why? Because Governor Snyder was trying to save a buck, and they are still the ones who are paying a heavy-ass price for this. And then there's me, getting onto a microphone, screaming into the wind, being absolutely furious that this is again happening in my country, happening to an American city, a terrorist's wet dream. Think about it, how a terrorist would love to just take out the power grid, right? Think about how many people without power, how many people without any sort of media to know what's going on around them. Okay, hospitals without power, so they can't help people, they can't save people's lives, they can't keep people on life support. I mean, think about that. Or here in Portland, a little while back, there's a water reservoir in a neighborhood called Mount Tabor. It's a big open air reservoir, which I thought was kind of sketchy to begin with, because big open air, I mean, anything could fall into it. Birds could crap into it or whatever. So a young man, just out doing the dumb things that young men do, decided late at night to go up to the reservoir and pee into it. There's 38 million gallons of water in this reservoir. And after the video surfaced of him going up to it and urinating in it, then came the calls. Oh, that's disgusting. I don't want that water. I don't want it in my home. He urinated in it. There was talk about emptying out 38 million gallons. I'm sure the pee was probably the cleanest thing that fell into there. But even still, they said, what eventually ended up happening, we didn't drain the reservoir. We realized how ridiculous that is. But it's now going to be covered. But think about how badly people freaked out just at the mere idea that there might be some pee-pee in their water. And now these folks in Flint, they've got lead, thousands of parts per billion in their water. The kind of poisoning that's these kids are going to have lifetime problems. So Governor Snyder says, well, perhaps we should give these kids Medicaid for life or Medicare for life, because he's recognizing that they are going to have lifelong problems. But it's not enough, because they still haven't even began replacing the water infrastructure, the pipes in the ground, the water heaters in the home. They still haven't began replacing that stuff. And I'm furious about it, but I'm one man with one microphone, but I'm not the only one.
It seems that Governor Snyder was trying to blame, through any evidence, it seems that Governor Snyder was trying to blame the city of Flint for actions of his own appointee. And he did this in his state of the state address to the entire population of Flint. Now, let me ask you something else. Are the people paying right now in Flint for water they cannot wash in and cannot use and cannot drink? Are they paying water bills? And is it a part of the recovery? You said you want to make them whole. Is that part of it? Why would they be paying for water that they cannot even use that is poisoning them? That's not American. As Mr. Chairman said, this is not a third world country. Are they paying those bills? Are you going to relieve them of that?
Right now, we are in the third week of February on the 16th. The NAACP president, Cornell Brooks, said that he's going to give Snyder, Governor Snyder, 30 days before disruptive civil obedience happens within Michigan. And he hasn't specifically said what that is, but he says they will be disrupting business as usual for the Michigan government. Now, that could be stand-ins, that could be die-ins, that could be just marching down the street, whatever it is, that could be marching up to Governor Snyder's office. But I think something much, much larger needs to happen. And I am with Senator Bernie Sanders on this. I think it's time that Governor Snyder resigns. I don't know how their constitution works in that state, if it's the lieutenant governor who takes over or whatever, but this is clearly a Republican problem because this is what they do. In trying to convince everybody that government is a horrible, no good, very bad thing, and in trying to sell off all of our public infrastructure, these are the kind of things that happen. And it isn't Governor Snyder who's got nasty water. Oh, no. Oh, no. It isn't the people that work for Governor Snyder that's got nasty water. Mm-mm. Oh, no. They have clean water. It's only the largely African-American, underprivileged population of Flint, Michigan that has no clean water. And they're getting incredibly high water bills. And for what water they can't do anything with but flush the toilet. That's it. And it's time for Governor Snyder to step down.
I don't go around asking for governor's resignations every day. In fact, I think I never have in my life. But I did ask for the resignation of Governor Snyder because his irresponsibility was so outrageous. What we are talking about are children being poisoned. That's what we're talking about.
Can you really blame him, Melvin? Look, he was just trying to be responsible. Perhaps you Democrat people don't know about responsible government because you're so busy spending money. You mean on infrastructure, roads, bridges, police, fire, clean water, clean air. Yeah, you're so busy spending money when you should not be spending money. What you should be doing is cutting costs and killing or maiming people. You're right. I don't understand why this is okay. I don't understand why this is a good thing. And to hell, the pro-life folks. Hello, pro-life folks. Are you out there? Are you listening? Forgive me. I know I'm getting kind of mean right now. I'm getting kind of jerky. Yes, I am. I'm responding to this in a very visceral way. But I can't believe I'm watching this happen, not just to another American city, but to an African-American city, an underprivileged African-American city. And it still is not the top of the news. And when I hear major media talk about this, they said, officials switched the water source and they shouldn't have done that. And they're trying to figure out what to do now. Wow, that's really diplomatic of you. Oh, they just switched the water source. Oh, this isn't no big thing. Governor Snyder switched the water source. If the mayor, the local mayor, or the city council had said, no, Governor Snyder, you're not switching the water source, or when the water source got switched, and by the way, the people of Flint noticed right away, had it been switched back immediately, Governor Snyder would have said, no, you can't do that. Remember, emergency manager, you have been stripped of your power. And to the pro-life who loves saving the fetuses, and there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, it's very noble of you. You want to save the fetuses, right? Because those are human lives. I understand that you don't make it to a lot of anti-war rallies, and that's fine. Some of you do, but not a lot of you. I did meet one of those pro-life progressive folks at a rally recently, which was pretty interesting. And she and I got into a spirited discussion about abortion. And there's not really a way to win an argument like that. But I did end up with the last word in that particular discussion, because I said, and it's a hard thing to disagree with, especially if you're a lady, you can't tell women what to do with their bodies. And as much as she didn't like that, she understood that and she respected that. But for those of you that are pro-life, you should be screaming about war, but by and large, you're not. And if you really want to save some lives, you really should be screaming at the top of your lungs about Flint, not unlike I am. Look, Melvin, just trying to save some money. Good government. The kind of thing that you Democrats don't understand. Governor Snyder is a bit of a hero to the right, despite all this. Because remember, they're not blaming him. They're blaming the Democratic officials that had no power because they were under the direction of an emergency manager. So they like Governor Snyder. Governor Snyder is a superhero to them. Governor Snyder is austerity man.
Look, up in the sky!
It's a bird.
It's a plane.
Actually, he's down in the pipes. Faster than a speeding bacteria. More powerful than a democratically elected government. Able to poison thousands of children with the stroke of a pen. It's Austerity Man. Disguised as Michigan Governor Rick Snyder by day, Austerity Man runs government like a business. An inept criminal business, but nonetheless a business. Slashing regulation, taxes, and services. Austerity Man saw a chance to cut the fat, and he cut it. Austerity Man cut spending by replacing clean, expensive water with cheaper, poisonous water. Over 15 million taxpayer dollars saved in Flint. Thank you, Austerity Man. Spawned in the anti-government Tea Party wave of 2010, Austerity Man knows how to save money by withholding non-corrosive additives in a municipal water system. That's approximately three figures in daily savings. Thank you, Austerity Man. Small government, big spending cuts, less regulation, and business know-how. Sound familiar? Meanwhile, back in the pipes, when faced with inevitable disease, child poisoning, and a $1.5 billion bill for a new safe water system, Austerity Man effortlessly and naturally asked for financial help from the federal government. Thank you, Austerity Man.
And it's true, he has asked for help from the federal government. One, I guess that's not him spending money, that's the Fed spending money. And two, the federal government can still only do so much without him saying so. Because remember, there's a huge states' rights issue here too. And this is the kind of thinking that we're dealing with here, that we should run government like a business. This is an idea that needs to die because it does not work. And it will never work for this simple reason and this simple reason alone. Now, hey, before I get to that, we can run government smarter. That's a discussion that we can have. We can cut costs without hurting people. That's a discussion that we can have. But you cannot run government like a business for this reason and this reason alone. The purpose of government and the purpose of business are not the same thing. They do not have the same objective. For businesses, you're trying to make as much profit as possible. That's it. You have no allegiance to your local community. You have no allegiance to your... All you're trying to do is make as much profit as possible. That's the only thing that matters. But in a government, you're not supposed to make a bunch of profit. You're not supposed to kill people intentionally. And your actions matter a hell of a lot more. Government is this. It is us. We are all in this together. And Flint needs our help. Man, do they ever need our help. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to say that all Republicans are bad. But if a Republican steps up to the mic and says government is the problem, if you elect that guy, he or she is going to become your problem. You poisoned an entire American city. You should be ashamed of yourself, but I know better. I know you're not.
Don't abandon your children. Don't get pregnant at 14.
Don't allow your neighborhoods to deteriorate into free fire zones. That's what the African American community should have on their t-shirts. Am I wrong?
So that was Bill O'Reilly of Fox News. Fox has a bit of a complicated relationship with the African American community, and Bill has a gigantic problem with them walking around wearing shirts that say things like Black Lives Matter and Hands Up, Don't Shoot. He doesn't particularly care for those things. What he would rather they say is Don't Be a Baby's Mama and things of this nature. When it comes to Fox, because they are a mouthpiece for the RNC, they're a mouthpiece for the Republican Party, they are a mouthpiece for the Confederate States of America, they've got a bit of a rocky relationship with the African American community, but they're trying to change that. With respect to the election season that we are inside of right now, heading into South Carolina is always a little bit embarrassing for me. And here's why. Democrats do talk a lot about African American issues, and that is how they tend to get the African American vote. They talk about issues that affect people of limited means, right? They talk about the issue of race. They talk about, you know, racist policing, things of that nature. And the Republicans simply pretend that it's not there. But here is where it gets, here's where it gets embarrassing for me. And this happens about every 4 years. Because even if we've got an incumbent, somebody running for a president, running for re-election, the Republican still has to try to get the vote. So we're heading into the South. We're heading into South Carolina. The Republicans have their South Carolina primary coming up pretty quick here. Actually, by the time this show gets to you, they will have had it already. And then the Democrats will have theirs shortly thereafter. But going into South Carolina, you see everybody nakedly trying to get the specifically African-American vote. And there's two ways to go about it. So Bernie and Hillary are both seeking out those endorsements, right? Both seeking out those folks who have the attention of the African-American community. And they're speaking to the issues that specifically, you know, there are some issues that we all deal with when we're of lower means, but they speak specifically to the issues that are mainly or only affecting African-Americans. And then they go to all the usual subjects, you know, the head of the NAACP and Al Sharpton and all the rest. And so that part is a teeny tiny bit embarrassing, only because the kind of attention that is paid to African-American issues now is the kind of thing that we should pay all the time. Maybe a lot of Democrats do, but it really goes on steroids this time of year. But It's not because they aren't going, you know, that they aren't true about it. Yes, there are a lot of issues and they do want to deal with them, but the Republicans can't do the same thing. And they can't do, I mean, they can try. They're down there in South Carolina right now and some of those other southern states, and they are standing up at rallies and talking about how they're going to keep the Muslims out right now. They're going to build a wall and stop all the Mexicans. So but they need the Latino vote. They just do. They need the Latino vote. They need the African American vote. It's becoming increasingly hard. Now, they've won the presidency before without the African American vote, but they're not going to be able to do it without the Latino vote. That is the fastest growing group. But they're still going to try. They would like to get the African American vote. They really would. But those damn Democrats just keep fooling the black people because what? Because black people are not smart? Black people, African-American people, go for Democrats because they talk about the issues. And even though it's a lot more amplified right now, they do, especially Bernie Sanders, they do talk about the issues all the time. And Hillary Clinton has more and more been pointing out those issues as well, especially with the racist voting laws that we have now. We'll get to that in a minute. But to be a Republican and trying to get the African-American vote, it's not easy. especially when you go to Fox News and they say things that like you just heard Billow say. What about not getting pregnant at 14, huh? How about that instead of Black Lives Matter? And if you say Black Lives Matter around a conservative, there's a pretty good chance you're going to be met with their slogan, All Lives Matter. And when they say all lives, there is an asterisk. They're not talking about Syrians, and they're not talking about the people of Flint, Michigan, and they're not talking about the people of New Orleans. Oh, hell, they're just talking about white people. Forget any of those groups. They're not talking about, but they don't like it. Black Lives Matter. I see it in social media, the fights over the slogan Black Lives Matter. And there's a reason that it's a slogan, and it's because there's an awful lot of African Americans being murdered by police. It's just a state murder, and it's not being answered. But the Republicans still have to try to get the African American vote. So they go to their mouthpiece, Fox News, and a good way, because as I mentioned before, the Democrats are going into South Carolina and some of these other states, and they're finding these prominent African American leaders, right? And they say, you know, here's what I will do for the African American community. You know, can I count on your vote and or endorsement? So what do the Republicans do? Well, over on their mouthpiece, Fox News, they decide to bring on some African-American people. And that's great. That's great. Pretty white on that channel anyway. I know they've got Stacey Dash, but I'm sorry. Stacey Dash saying that Black Lives Don't Matter isn't the real thing. Sorry, you're not a part of this community anymore, because it is a real thing. Racism is very, very real.
Not only is it the start of the voting, it's also the start of Black History Month. Today is February 1st.
Yep, welcome to February. For years, African Americans have overwhelmingly supported Democratic candidates for president. Is there a Republican candidate this year that could cut into that support?
Here to weigh in is the editor and publisher of the conservative Black Chick blog, Crystal Wright.
Blacks have shown a slavish support for the Democrat Party for over 50 years. And part of me wonders if the Republican Party should even bother asking for the black vote, because black Americans seem to like being political dummies. There's, you know, we're the only race that has voted lock, stock, and barrel for the same party for over 50 years. But isn't it funny, Steve, that when a black liberal runs like Barack Obama, they just say, okay, we'll vote for you. We'll be dumb. We'll be stupid. We're just going to keep voting for you. It's the race card, Steve. I can be a black liberal and black voters won't even question my policies. Isn't that pathetic?
Okay, so Crystal, if I may, referring to black people as dumb and stupid and slaves, that's going to get their vote. Holy, that's a real thing. The conservative black chick blog. Look, you're a conservative for whatever reason you are. Maybe you are selfish. Maybe you believe in oligarchy. Maybe you don't see yourself as African American. For whatever reason, you're conservative. And I understand that conservatism is largely an economic issue. So maybe you believe in some of those Ayn Randian ideas, and that's fine. But to go on Fox and to call them dumb, to call them stupid, and to call them, I'm sorry, slaves, and to think that you're perhaps gonna convince a few of them to vote for the Democrat Party, and they say it like that on purpose. It sounds like incredibly poor English when they say Democrat Party, but they're doing that on purpose. But also, it does have the effect of helping them sound like they don't know how to talk, which is very helpful for their incredibly ignorant base. So there was an officer named Glenowitz that was murdered, you know, found murdered. And right away, it took Fox absolutely no time whatsoever. They knew exactly who did it.
The Illinois cop who staged his own death tried to have somebody kill an administrator who was reviewing his finances, hired a hitman or tried to. That's according to the Lake County Sheriff's Office. This story gets worse by the hour. Yesterday we heard investigators say Lieutenant Joseph Glenowitz killed himself in September and tried to make it look like somebody murdered him. They said he'd spent years stealing thousands and thousands of dollars from his department's youth program, and that records show he used money on his mortgage, his gym memberships, and even adult websites. Investigators say all of that was about to come to light, and that's why they believe Glenowitz staged his death. Even going so far, we now know, as to radio in a description of imaginary suspects before he shot himself. Well, today it got disgusting. Today we learned from investigators that the lieutenant tried to get a gang member to put a hit on the administrator who'd been going over his funds because he was worried he'd discover that he was stealing. The spokesman also says investigators found packets of cocaine in the now dead officer's desk. And he said that there are text messages that show the now dead lieutenant talked about planting something on the administrator, but that it's not clear if that's why he had the coke.
So, as you heard Shep say there, Joseph Glenowitz was doing some pretty unsavory things, pretty close to what would become the end of his life, and decided that he was going to stage his own death. And he was found murdered when other police showed up. And remember, Shepard Smith said that he called in a suspect description. He called in the description of an African-American man. And Mr. Glenowitz, prior to his death, tried to have an administrator murdered who was going to bring all these horrible things to light. But over on Fox News, as soon as this cop was found murdered, and they knew that he called in the description of a black suspect, oh, they couldn't wait to go ape dump on blaming the Black Lives Matter movement.
Well, investigators are suggesting that the wife and the son were involved. If that's true...
But anything beyond that? We don't have any way to know
right,
yet.
But if that's true, of course, once he died, they're not going to then admit that they were part of this. So they went along with the fact that he died in the line of duty. And now, of course, it's coming out that he killed himself. He tried to make it look like he was murdered by people that he reported were in the area.
And think of the narrative that came out of that from so many, many places about it's the fault of the Black Lives Matter movement and all of this stuff that was just, it really turned up the rhetoric and it really was factually wrong.
I talked about Hillary Clinton on last week's show, how much hatred there is for her, and how I believe that a lot of it is unjustified. And even when they, and even when folks find out that the things that they heard about Hillary Clinton are not true, it doesn't matter because she's never completely exonerated. The stink never ever completely washes off. And when you have a news channel or Fox, who masquerades as a news channel, go 24/7 about how the Black Lives Matter movement killed this police officer when they don't even give that kind of time to the African Americans who are killed by police. Even when we find out that Joseph Glenowitz killed himself and was doing terribly unsavory things toward what would be the end of his life, the Black Lives Matter movement doesn't get to be completely exonerated. Some of the stink that was hurled at them by Fox, some of that's going to stick around. But there's no racism in these police departments. Okay, there is nothing but some black folks doing some bad things. There's no racism. What we learned about Ferguson after they were investigated by the Justice Department was the officers, pretty freely, on the government email system, would email racist jokes to each other and would use racist epithets. They had no qualms about that. And Ferguson was not the only one.
Sworn in just on Monday, the upcoming police chief in Farrell, Pennsylvania, is already on thin ice. This after an email surfaced when he made some racial slurs. Erie News Now, Justin Carter has more.
It was not acceptable in my eyes.
An uneasy feeling for Farrell Councilwoman Stephanie Sheffield after an email blast was sent out, allegedly written by the city's next police chief, Thomas Burke. He was just sworn in on Monday and planned to start in January.
I was very hurt and upset, and I just feel that it was a negative response for our area here in Sharon and Farrell.
It reads, quote, "Good morning. Please click and review. Even $1 will be greatly appreciated. Them Sharon expletive gotta learn how to read."
The expletive that you're missing there is the N-word. He openly used this in an email. Those N-words need to learn how to read. He was just, one could say, well, he's not racist. He came into the department and he deals with a lesser advantaged community, and that happens to be made up of a lot of African Americans for whatever reason, and it only looks like he's racist. But this guy had just gotten the job, was a week on the job, and clearly came into the office with racist intentions. Now, let me be clear here. It's not at all fair to say most police are racist. That's not true. Or most. Or even a ton of them. I believe that it is a small sliver in any town of police that are racist. I believe the amount of police that are racist probably aren't too much larger than the population at large. But what we need is we need a bit of a filtering system. First of all, we need conservative outlets to stop blaming African American people for everything and stop saying that we can't have things like the Black Lives Matter movement because that's not a real thing. And that's also not a real good way for you guys to get votes for the Republican Party. But we do need to have some better filters in place when we here a federal standard. If you do it state by state, they're going to let racists in. But if you have a federal standard, some way to weed out the racist folks. And of course, the southern states are going to fight this, but it's necessary to get rid of the racist police practices. But it's going to be hard to do because while you clearly have a handful of racist police, you know, not departments as a whole or not police as a whole. While you clearly have racist police practices, that's not the only place. You also have racist mortgage practices, and you also have racist voting practices, which are the voter ID laws, trying to stop people from voting in African American communities, knowing where the African Americans are and intentionally putting less places for them to vote in those communities that are largely African American, clearly. But back to the police issue here. We need to find a way to weed those folks out. Those folks, those police officers that give a bad name, that handful of police officers that give a bad name to all the rest of them. But once again, if you talk to conservatives, there really is no race issue. One of the reasons that Antonin Scalia was ready to get rid of the Voting Rights Act was because he said, clearly we don't have these racist issues anymore, when Scalia himself, if you read any of his opinions, was pretty clearly a racist. And so ask the conservatives and they'll say, there's not a lot of racist policing practices. No, there's not a lot of racist voting practices. And so it should be no surprise to us when they refuse to admit that the Black Lives Matter movement exists. But they are willing to say, and I've seen a lot more of these t-shirts and bumper stickers, police lives matter, police lives matter. Well, of course they matter. But that becomes their slogan because they don't want to deal with the reality.
Police are the most mistreated people in this country. I will tell you that. The most mistreated people. But can I say, we need vigilance.
This is another place where the Democratic Party and the Republican Party part ways. Okay. the statement that Trump made there is also not a fair. They're not the most mistreated. But what it is they don't want to own up to the problem with racist police or racist police practices. They don't want to admit that the Black Lives Matter movement is there because it has to exist because of the terrible things that are happened specifically to African Americans. But once again, here is your division with the parties. Conservatives say it's not a problem and it's not happening. And police are so mistreated, but then the Democratic Party is way, way apart with them on this one.
Thirdly, we have got to demilitarize our police department so they don't look like occupying armies. We got to move toward community policing. And fourthly, we have got to make our police departments look like the communities they serve in their diversity.
To protect and serve. It's a pretty common slogan for the police department, to protect and serve. And yes, your police should look like the communities, not just racially, but they also shouldn't be militarized. They should not, as Bernie said, look like an occupying force. Now, that is not the fault necessarily of police departments. Because of the war culture that we have, because we've bought so many tanks and guns and tactical gear and all this other stuff, we have a lot of it left over now that the wars have wound down in Iraq and Afghanistan. And what do they do with all that stuff? Well, they don't just throw it away. Some of it went into burn pits in Iraq. We'll cover that in a few weeks. But they don't just throw it away. They give it to local police departments. And then whenever something serious happens, the police all of a sudden show up looking like an occupying force. That's very frightening. And you don't look like you're here to protect or serve. You look like you're here to start a war in my neighborhood. But the way that I talk about these things, the term in which I talk about these things, one could pretty easily say,
You just want them to be politically correct. You want them to take racial sensitivity training and you.
No. I would just like them to not be racist if they're going to be policing us. And it's not about political correctness. It's about mutual respect. The police should be there to serve and protect. People should not fear their police. The no snitching campaign, and I don't know if many of you have heard about this, but, and I've lived in a lot of ghettos and I listen to hip hop music, so I've heard an awful lot about it, but I never understood it. They said it doesn't matter. Never ever talk to police. I don't care if your brother was murdered. You do not talk to the police. And that is because there's a general mistrust of the police. There's a belief generally within inside the African American community that they can't trust anybody, and that the police are not there to serve and protect. The police are there to harass them. They're there to take their things away. Any number of terribly negative things. And they said, "Don't snitch. Don't help them. You know, they can't compel you to do anything." And so there ends up being this very deep divide between these two communities that really should be able to work together. And I've lived in some neighborhoods where we call the police, and the police do not come. Or if they come, it's hours and hours later. I have had to dial 911 more times in my life than I really care to admit. And sometimes the police would come right away. Sometimes the police would come hours later. Sometimes the police would never come. And yes, those varying degrees were due to the neighborhood that I lived in.
And that's why we need to reject any politics that targets people because of race or religion. Yeah. Right, let me just say this. This is not a matter of political correctness. This is a matter of understanding just what it is that makes us strong. The world respects us not just for our arsenal. It respects us for our diversity and our openness and the way we respect every faith. His Holiness Pope Francis told this body, from the very spot that I'm standing on tonight, that to imitate the hatred and violence of tyrants and murderers is the best way to take their place. When politicians insult Muslims, whether abroad or our fellow citizens, when a mosque is vandalized or a kid is called names, that doesn't make us safer. That's not telling it like it is. It's just wrong. It diminishes us in the eyes of the world. It makes it harder to achieve our goals. It betrays who we are as a country.
The fear that is spread in conservative communities about Mexicans, about African Americans, and about Muslims is unjustified. That kind of xenophobia doesn't get us anywhere. It doesn't help us out at all. First of all, we need to recognize the problems. Are unwilling or unable to recognize them, we're not going to be able to solve them. And second, cut the BS about political correctness. It's not about that. If you want to say racist or homophobic things and you get called out, that doesn't mean that you're being edited. That doesn't mean that we're calling for political correctness. That means you don't get to say those things and not be called out for them. We do need to do something about the police department. We do need to do something about the divided communities. We do need to do something about the segregation, but we also need to do something about our justice system.
Equal justice under law. That's supposed to be the basic premise of our legal system, that our laws are just and that everyone, no matter how rich or how powerful or how well connected, will be held equally accountable if they break those laws. But that's not the America we live in. It's not equal justice when a kid gets thrown in jail for stealing a car, while a CEO gets a huge raise when his company steals billions. It's not equal justice when someone hooked on opioids gets locked up for buying pills on the street, but bank executives get off scot-free for laundering nearly $1 billion of drug cartel money. We have one set of law in the books, but there are really two legal systems. One legal system is for big corporations, for the wealthy and the powerful. In this legal system, government officials fret about unintended consequences if they're too tough. In this legal system, instead of demanding actual punishment for breaking the law, the government regularly accepts token fines and phony promises to do better next time. In this legal system, even after huge companies plead guilty to felonies, law enforcement officials are so timid that they don't even bring charges against individuals who work there. That's one system. The second system is for everyone else. In this second system, whoever breaks the law can be held accountable. Government enforcement isn't timid here. It's aggressive. Consequences be damned. Just ask the families of Sandra Bland, Freddie Gray, and Michael Brown about how aggressive they are. In this legal system, the government locks up people for decades, ruining lives over minor drug crimes, because that's what the law demands. Yes, there are two legal systems, one for the rich and powerful, and one for everyone else. The American people know that we have two legal systems, but they expect us to fix it. They expect us to stand for justice. They expect us to once again honor the simple notion that in America, nobody is above the law. And anyone in Congress who thinks they can simply talk tough on crime and then vote to make it harder to crack down on corporate criminals, hear this. I promise you, the American people are watching, and they will remember.
We also cannot fix it if we are unable to recognize the problem. And remember this. There is two different justice systems for the rich and the poor. There's also two different justice systems for the white and the black. But by and large, the justice systems treat you way better if you have money and way worse if you have no money. And that puts us, of all races, because based on income, we're in the same boat. That puts us, of all races, in the same boat together. And yet there still continues to be a racial divide in this country. Martin Luther King was a civil rights icon, a civil rights hero who worked for the rights, human rights of all people. And yet, even today, there are southern states that do not recognize Martin Luther King Day. They would much rather remember a Confederate general.
Happy Martin Luther King Day. And in addition, if you are a resident of Mississippi, Alabama, or Arkansas, technically, I should also wish you Happy Robert E. Lee Day. I'm not kidding. In those three states, they have decided to celebrate their official state observance of Martin Luther King's birthday, coincident with an additional state holiday celebrated on the same day to commemorate one of the Confederate generals from the American Civil War.
And the RNC's internal information, their internal numbers, tell them that if they can keep, that if they have a voter ID law, that if they cut early voting times, that if they cut, they cut Monday voting, they cut the soul to the polls voting, they can keep African Americans away from the ballot box. So maybe they've decided that it's not important to try to get the African American vote anymore. What they're going to do is they're simply going to just try to keep them away from the ballot box, but say the reason why is because, well, it's not about African Americans. It's because there's so much voter fraud.
This is wrong. 50 years after Rosa Parks sat and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. marched and John Lewis bled, it is hard to believe that we are back having this same debate about whether or not every American gets a chance to vote and exercise his rights. This is a blast from the Jim Crow past. And you know, we hear the same excuses we've always heard to justify laws that disproportionately affect people of color. Or for that matter, low-income people, women, young people, seniors. Whenever I hear somebody trying to justify what is so clearly unjustifiable, claiming that it has nothing to do with denying voting rights, I'm reminded of an old saying that I heard for the first time when I lived in Arkansas. You find a turtle on a fence post, it didn't get there by accident. All of these obstacles to voting didn't happen on their own, but for every Republican governor working to roll back voting rights, there are Americans determined to keep marching forward. I'm proud of everyone in Alabama who leapt into action to confront this misguided decision to close driver's licenses offices. And you've got people all over this nation who are rooting for you and standing with you. And it's time for your governor and the legislature not only to listen to their constituents, but listen to their conscience about what it means to be a leader in our country.
Pick any state in the union, any state in the union, and you'll find that voter fraud numbers don't even crack the double digits. And in the states where they do crack the double digits, hey, 20 or 30 or even 80 people voting fraudulently isn't going to swing an election. But like I said before, this is something that we first need to recognize. And simply recognizing it is not enough. We need to get involved and we need to become a part of the solution. Yes, I am here on the microphone, but this isn't the only thing that I do. Because if we stand idly by and maybe say, yes, it's wrong. It's wrong that these things happen, but we don't do anything about it. We're just as culpable as the people that write those incredibly racist laws.
Most of us are non-racist. Because racism is looked upon as some moral lapse, we feel quite self-assured by simply not being racist. I'm not a bigot. I don't sing that N-word when my favorite rap jam comes on. I didn't vote for that guy. I'm not burning any crosses. I'm not a skinhead. I don't, I won't, I'm not, I've never, I can't. What you end up with is an entire moral stance, an entire code for living your life and dealing with all the injustice in the world by not doing a damn thing. That's the great thing about none. You can pull it off by simply rolling over in your bed and going to sleep. So why are you sitting at home and watching things unfold on TV instead of doing something about it? Because you're a non-racist, not an anti-racist. Now do this for me. Take the C out of racist and replace it with a P. I'm not a rapist. I'm not friends with any rapist. I didn't buy that rapist last album. All these things that you're not doing. Meanwhile, people are still getting raped. And black boys are being killed. It's not enough that you don't do these things. You're going to bed with a clear conscience. It's not going to stop college students from getting assaulted. You thinking climate change is terrible is not going to stop climate change. You being so assured that you're not anti-black, anti-Muslim, won't stop the next hate crime. And it's wonderful that you recognize how brave gay people are when facing persecution, but they aren't the ones who need to be brave. We need to get active. We need to hold people accountable. We need to accept that what hurts one of us hurts all of us. And we need to stop thinking that injustice going on in the world isn't to an extent our fault. We need to stop being none and start being anti.
Injustice to some of us is injustice to all of us. And yes, it does help to recognize the problem. And we haven't even gotten that far. For a lot of us, we won't even admit that the problem is a problem. And that in itself is a problem. Because yes, we do need to recognize that these things are real, that we do need the Black Lives Matter movement, that we do need to do something about the justice system, that we do need to do something about racist policing, but we can't get there if we won't even admit at first that it's happening and that it's a problem. So that's the first step. That's the very, very first thing. I get out and I vote every election season, no matter how small the election is, no matter how few things are on the ballot, I get out every single time. But that's not enough. That's why I do other types of work. That's why I give money to politicians that I believe in, and that's why I work for them and do things of this nature, because it's not enough to simply say that this is what I want to do and this is what I believe in. You have to get out there and you have to make these things happen. You have to be a part of it. Yeah, fine, you're not a racist. What are you doing to help the African-American community? Fine. You're not a homophobe. But what are you doing? We all need to be doing something. We all need to stand up. We all need to be counted. We all need to be brave. Because it's not enough to just be against it. You have to do something about it. But first we have to recognize the problem. And that's where we're at right now. I don't know how this is going to turn out. But we have a chance this year. We have a chance for change. Whether Bernie becomes the president or not, him being a part of the race has definitely shifted the conversation to very important things that even Secretary Clinton would have to do something about if she became president. And we're staring into the future of a political revolution. And we rise as one, we fall as one. We're all in this together. We can do better. We're America, and we can do anything. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. You can download or stream the shows at OpenSkyArchive.com. Our official home is Kiwi Station. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TFYCPO. You can listen on the go. Just download the Kiwi Station app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. The Open Sky Archive app is still available at both app stores. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode of Melvin Going Like This. Here we go. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo at gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out. And we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. And a big thanks to Kiwi Station for putting us on and making us available 24/7, 365 around the world. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.